Hello, everyone. Welcome to Just Getting By, episode 43, for Monday, the 14th of November, 2011. My name is Craig Jones, and I'm joined, as always, by Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Howdy.
How are you doing this beautiful Monday afternoon?
It's Monday.
It is. Yeah, it's Monday. It's the start of a new week. Sometimes that's a good thing. Oftentimes that is not a good thing.
This week, it is not a good thing.
Anything you can talk about on the show?
Yeah. Had a three-day weekend. Monday. It sucks.
I'm sure it does. So, you know, Chemslave, we had a big week last week when we talked about the Greek and Italian crises, and we were a lot more correct than we thought. We discussed how the Prime Minister of Greece, George Papandreou, was going to step down in favor of a man named Lucas Papademos. But that was a rumor. That was even at the time that we were talking more of a prediction. And then I said that Silvio Berlusconi over in Italy was going to have to resign as well sometime before the end of his term. Now, I will admit that while technically I was correct, I had no idea just how correct I would be. He fell even before it became clear who was going to succeed George Papandreou. So in a way, Berlusconi fell before Greece's prime minister did, which is astonishing. A man named Mario Monti, Chemslave, is going to be leading Italy if he can form a government. See, that's the thing. Silvio Berlusconi is still the prime minister of Italy. He submitted his resignation Sunday evening. But until Mario Monti can form a government, before he can establish a working majority, he will not be able to actually form a government, and therefore he will not be prime minister. This is one of the downfalls to a parliamentary system of government. You don't really know what you're going to be getting. A prime minister can resign, but if the political forces in the country are so unstable, it's possible that you could be a resigned prime minister who is still prime minister quite a long time, you know, out. You see this example right now in Belgium. For over 2 years now, the prime minister has resigned, and he's still the prime minister because they have just not been able to get a government together. And
don't have a government for over 2 years now?
Well, they have the old government that was voted out of office. Isn't that insane? Because of the political indecision in the country, they basically elected a government that does not exist. And because of that, they have been stuck with what is, in all honesty, a illegitimate and not democratically elected government, by no fault of the government itself, just because they cannot get a new government together. This has been over 2 years now. They beat out Iraq as the longest any country has ever gone without being able to form a new government. Now, Iraq, a few years ago, after some elections, I think it was just before Obama came into office, they had a hard time getting a coalition together to form a government. And so that took a long time. That took about a year. I think it was like 9 months. But Belgium just blew them out of the water, and it's amazing. So in a very small sense, that's what's happening in Italy. People think that because Berlusconi resigned, he is no longer prime minister. But that's not technically true. He is still the prime minister. Now, he is severely weakened, and he expects to give up his title within a day. Normally, 99% of the time, when a prime minister in a parliamentary system submits his resignation to the head of state, that head of state will ask somebody immediately to start the process of forming a government. And normally that'll take about a day if it's like a new election where an opposition party has a clear majority. It'll take just like a day of formalities. But in a case like this, where there has been no election and the prime minister has been forced to resign because of defections within his own party, you still have an opposition that does not technically have a majority. And so that opposition needs to, look around for junior coalition members. It would be like the Democrat Party having... It would be like Obama and the Democrat Party having to submit his resignation to some other kind of head of state. And then the Republicans having to look around for, like, the Constitutionalist Party, or like the Green Party, or somebody to join with them in order to form a government, because they don't have enough votes by themselves to gain a majority. It's a lot more difficult to think of from our point of view, because we don't have that system. But anyway, the man who is tasked with forming a government in Italy, his name is Mario Monti, and he's expected to form a government pretty soon, because the Italian politicians want to get this over with, and they want to start implementing reforms that Europe is pressing them to implement in order to try and get back from the brink of fiscal collapse. So my prediction is Mario Monti will be the next prime minister of Italy, and that'll happen possibly by the time that the audience is listening to the show, or if not, at least, at the most by Tuesday.
So isn't Portugal having problems as well?
With their economy?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Is their prime minister going to get ousted and another
it's funny you should say
banker going to come in?
It's funny you should say that. It already happened. Happened a year ago. I briefly made reference to this in the last show, but I didn't spend a lot of time on it. There are four countries in the Eurozone right now that have had governments fall because of the debt crisis. The first one was Ireland in 2008, I believe, or maybe early 2009. That government fell because of the debt crisis and because of austerity measures that the people in Ireland did not like. And then later on in 2009, the Portugal government fell because of austerity measures brought on by crippling debt. And then the Greek government fell twice, once in 2009 and again in 2011, because of the debt and austerity measures. And this latest fall in Greece by George Papandreou, that was more brought on because of his idiocy than anything else. But we talked about that in last Monday's show, episode 39, I believe. And now this is the fourth government to fall. So it's funny you should bring up Portugal, because their government already fell. And so somebody else is brought in. And I believe that you're right. I believe this is a technocrat that's in office now. I believe this is somebody who has economic experience and is guiding Portugal along the lines where the rest of Europe and the banks want them to go. And you'll see that with Mario Monti. You'll see that with Lucas Papademos. And I don't think that was the situation in Ireland, but the effect was the same. All of these governments fall, and then the new ones that come in are so afraid that they will follow the same fate that they as well tried to implement these austerity policies, and they do everything the rest of Europe, namely Germany and France, want them to do.
AKA, they're screwed.
Yeah, basically. All of these governments still have crippling debt, and they are providing less and less services to their public. And so what basically happens is they're spinning, the tires are spinning, but the truck's not going anyplace. And the people inside are going longer and longer and longer with nothing to show for it. And these countries are continuously getting into more debt. Eventually, most of these countries, and it is my opinion, are going to have to default. And I believe that this will spell the end of the Eurozone as we know it. We have, Chemslave, something a little bit analogous to that going on in America. And that is, we have debt talks going on right now on Capitol Hill. Do you know about the super committee?
Slightly. I know they have some type of deadline.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's sometime in late November. There are some sites, some news organizations that say, well, it's about 10 or 9 days away. Well, that may or may not be the case. There's a lot of wiggle room in these so-called deadlines. But sometime in November, this super committee, composed of 6 members of the House and 6 members of the Senate, have to find some way to cut over $1 trillion over 10 years, or else drastic reductions in defense will come into effect. This is a stupid, stupid committee. It's undemocratic, because these are comprised of people that, while they were elected to represent their own home districts, nobody elected them to fulfill this, extraordinary committee role. I mean, there's no need for this. This is not... This is Washington just on steroids and in all the wrong ways. This is an example of how big government, when it gets bigger, it just gets so complex and so corrupt that there's really very little you can do aside from voting these idiots out of office.
Vote them out, and then we get more other idiots in.
You see, that's what I was going to say, because it pains me, because one of the reasons why we have this super committee is because the Republicans won in 2010. This super committee was a joint result from Speaker of the House John Boehner, a Republican, and Barack Obama, a Democrat, coming together and not being able to agree on anything. And so they punted. What this is a result of is those debt ceiling talks that happened a few months ago, where it looked like we were not going to be able to raise our debt limit, and we were going to hit that, which meant that we would not be able to borrow anymore, and that we would have to default on our loans. And supposedly because Republicans were so intransigent, because of that, we lost our AAA credit rating from S&P. That was just a total clusterfuck in many, many different ways. But anyway, so what came out of that the eventual agreement that allowed us to have a raising of the debt ceiling was this super committee. This super committee is tasked with finding, like I said before, $1.2 trillion in debt reduction over 10 years. But and these are all theoretical. They're looking into the future when they should be looking... I have a post up on my personal website, technopolitics.com. Techni as an I, technopolitics.com. That discusses this. It's in reference to the older debt ceiling debate, but it's as relevant today as it was back then. And I explain in that about how these debt reduction talks work. And that what happens is they try to save money from projected budgets in the future. So we say we spend $10 on healthcare today, and in 2012 we project to spend $15 on healthcare. So if you cut the $5 from that projection in 2012, and we say we're going to spend $10 in 2012, you can say that's a 33% cut, when in fact you're not cutting anything. You're just not spending more. And on a much
more... It's more bullshit, political math.
Exactly. And that's exactly what's happening here. And... The Democrats on this committee, by the way, walked out in a huff this past week because they couldn't they couldn't agree on anything. So this is just, they're going to play political brinksmanship. The Republicans and Democrats are not going to be able to come together until the last day, and they're going to throw us some bullshit compromise that will stop the Defense Department from getting just shafted, which is probably not a good term to be using at this time, but we'll get into that later on. But eventually, we are not going to see the decline in our defense budget that is threatened by inaction by this super committee. But we are going to see some debt reduction plan that doesn't have any basis in reality. Until the very idea of a cut in the budget changes, we're not going to be able to fix anything. When we start actually spending less money than we did the year before, that is when we're going to start to see a decline in our deficit. Not until then.
Yeah, we should cut things like the TSA and their stupid scanners.
Absolutely. You know what? Rick Perry this week at the second to last presidential debate got himself into a lot of trouble for not being able to name one of three cabinet agencies that he would get rid of. But you know what? It's political suicide for a lot of people to say, hey, I want to get rid of a lot of cabinet agencies. But I think it shows some bravery. We have 15, or depending on how you count it, 16 or 17 or even 18 cabinet-level agencies. Not all of them should be cabinet-level agencies. Not all of them should be independent. In fact, many of them should not be. So Rick Perry, for instance, wants to get rid of the education, commerce, and energy departments. He forgot energy, by the way. That's what got him. He couldn't think of energy. And Ron Paul famously wants to get rid of 5 agencies. Those 3 plus... I'm having a Rick Perry moment. But it's those 3 plus... The environment... Whatever that one is, I forget what that one is, but he wants to get rid of a lot of them too, and these people are just getting lambasted for that. But we have to have significant cuts in our government. It's gotten too big. We have too many little programs hidden in the budgets of these agencies. There's probably no department of the government that does not deserve to be cut somewhat, and some of them need to be cut into oblivion. So. You're right about that.
I think the problem is that, like, when we talk about cutting, like, departments, normally people don't say, oh, we're going to just completely remove it. We're just going to, I think what cutting department is just keeping the central parts of it and moving it to some other area that sort of, you can sort of have, instead of having, like, 15 agencies doing the same thing on some small scale, having one agency that sort of controls multiple things, and one of them is that specific function.
Absolutely. That's my dream as well. When I say cut, I do mean, however, like today we have a secretary of education and an education department. There was no excuse for that department to be independent. There was no excuse for that department to have the budget that it does, because that is just money wasted. Our education priorities have been off. They have been just funneled. That money's been funneled into a black hole, which is the education department, for as long as it has been in existence, which has only been for a few decades, by the way. This is not an old agency by any means. So I'm advocating to destroy that agency, get rid of everything, and move the functions of that really are important into the Department of the Interior. And you'll have like a little agency in the Department of the Interior that deals with education. That's what I want to see happen. Same with commerce. Same with energy. Same with housing and urban development. Same with agriculture. By the way, I think those were Ron Paul's ones as well. A lot of those agencies should be folded into pre-existing agencies, such as the Treasury, which is what commerce would go into, I'm sure. Agriculture would go into the interior, you know, things like that. The important aspects of these departments should go into a pre-existing department, but I could envision seeing a 25 to 35% cut across the board in government spending from those agencies. Is that too radical for you?
For me, not really, but you'd have to, like, be sure that you're not screwing the pooch, and it has to be done with, like, sort of with a balance, so you don't screw the whole country up by, oh, we're going to cut everything over here and put these over here, and we're going to keep the same budget for this department, and we're going to screw the pooch completely.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. You can cut too much, or the cut could be totally fictional, and you're just doubling the size of one agency by just molding the two and not getting rid of anything. I definitely see what you mean, and you need to be careful of that. But the sad fact of the matter is, we have a lot of agencies of government that only exist to line the pockets of people on Capitol Hill, and only exist to be used as political clubs to bat your opponents with. So, you know, Kemslave, we've had some issues in Pennsylvania with football this past week. For those of you that do not realize, both Kemslave and myself live in central Pennsylvania. We were both about an hour away from State College, which is the town that houses Penn State University. And I don't need to tell anybody listening to this that there's been some issues with Penn State. Kim Slave, you want to give us a little background on that?
Well, it seems to be, or it is that one of the assistant coaches or something like that, he was doing something not really good. Molesting kids, and there seems to be some type of cover-up occurring with the whole thing, where people were informed that something was being something wrong was going on, and shit not being done to fix the issue.
Exactly right, but you kind of molestation doesn't cover it. The assistant coach in question, his name is Jerry Sandusky, is accused of raping. It's right now 9 little boys, but I'm sure he did a lot more. And some of these rapes have been committed in the locker room of the Penn State Nittany Lions football team. And in one of these instances, and it was an instance of sodomy,
fuck.
You okay?
Stink bug was walking over me. Sorry.
That's all right. One of the times that Sandusky was assaulting a little boy, he was caught by at the time it was a TA. It was like a teacher assistant. It was a coach, an assistant coach. And he went to Joe Paterno, who was the head coach of the Nittany Lions for over 45 years. He said to Paterno, hey, Sandusky is doing lewd things to a little boy. And so Paterno went and told the athletic director, nominally his boss. And he didn't say anything else about it. And the athletic director and the vice president for business and finance both knew about the complaints against Sandusky and covered it up. They forced him into an early retirement But Sandusky was still allowed to have access to all buildings on campus and still had an office in the field house at Penn State. And Sandusky had this foundation that would gather little boys who, from troubled backgrounds. And, you know, it was like a summer camp type thing. And he would use this as a way to ensnare his victims. And this was his buffet table, so to speak. He would take them and have his way with them. And this continued after Penn State knew about his actions. So you have now the phenomenon that Penn State and Joe Paterno knew about Sandusky and what he was doing. And they let him go. So this came to light earlier this year. And it really, really came to light a few weeks ago, when the grand jury testimony about this was made public. And eventually the president of the university and Joe Paterno, who had knowledge of this, but no legal culpability, were fired by the Penn State Board of Trustees. And the athletic director and the vice president for finance and business are now being charged with obstruction of justice, because they were involved in a literal cover-up. So anyway, Joe Paterno is now no more the head coach of Penn State, which is...
And many people are pissed off about that.
Yeah, it's a shame, because he had such moral credibility. He always wanted his players to be active students and always wanted them to be fine, upstanding citizens. And
but he was not very moral in this case.
He was not. That's what I'm getting at. He had a lot of moral authority. And in a lot of ways, he was the most important man on campus. In many, many ways, he was Penn State. And he had no cause to withhold anything from anybody. He was the living, breathing embodiment of Penn State. Some people have said that he was the most powerful man in Pennsylvania. And in some ways, that's actually not hyperbole. And yet, when he was presented with information about one of his direct underlings doing terrible things to little boys, he didn't do anything. He did the very minimum required of him by law, and he went to tell his superior. But that's it. He didn't do anything else. That was
what we should be doing as citizens. We should be only doing what is legally obligated and nothing else.
Well, that's evidently what he thought. But he thought incorrectly, because he spelled his own doom by doing that. He didn't act with the moral righteousness that he should have. He didn't act with the decisiveness that he could have. And it caused him to end his whole career in disgrace. The man is 84 years old, and he had been coaching the Nittany Lions for 45 years, 63 seasons. And what a way to go. Because the man won more games than any other college coach in history, at least in his division, Division I. And like I said before, he had such high moral authority, and everybody loved him to have done such a terrible thing morally and not expose what was happening in his own premises, in his own field house, is just baffling. It's heartbreaking to some extent. And then, as an elderly man, he was fired, and rightfully so. I mean, this is a classic example of a man who did not retire when he should have. Should have retired 10, 15 years ago. He would have gone down in history as one of the best coaches in the history of football, in the history of any sport. And he would have survived with his reputation intact. He held on too long. He was greedy. He lost sight of why he was there. And he's paying the price for that now. Now, Chemslave, you actually have a little bit of a joke in our show notes. Our show notes can be found at justgettingbypodcast.com.
Well, it's a joke, but it's not really.
No, yeah, unfortunately, it's not a joke, because tell us what it references.
Well, I'll describe it. It has two priests. One is holding it like a newspaper and says, like, Jopa fired, and the other one's like, why didn't they just move him to another school? Because, of course, that's what a lot of the Catholic bishops who had priests, like, who were rapists and child molesters would do. Something would occur. They would quietly move to another parish and sort of forget about it. Yep. I'm pretty sure that's what happened to the priest that was at my church. Because I think it was like a year after I was confirmed, he got the boot. He was sent packing because it turned out he molested someone sometime in like in the 80s or 70s, that at least that we know about.
Yeah. And all these cases of molestation and assaults, there's always a lot more than you know. The number of victims is often an order of magnitude greater than is publicly known at the time. And so the people that Jerry Sandusky, for example, molested are very likely to number in the dozens. And well, that's the real tragedy of this, because of the inaction of Joe Paterno and his superiors at Penn State, because they cared more about the image of Penn State than about the welfare of these kids that he was abusing, he being Sandusky, they allowed him to continue to go on raping little boys well after Paterno knew about it. You know, this whole situation is disgusting because Sandusky had a self-published autobiography. Do you know what that biography was named?
Nope.
You're going to think I'm joking, but I'm not. His name was Touched.
What?
His autobiography was named Touched. Google it.
I'm Googling it right now. Because that's just hard to believe.
And what's even worse is it was still available for purchase at the Penn State Library and bookstore, even after this scandal was made public. I'm sure by now it's been taken off the shelves. But it's just, there's this, like, culture of insensitiveness. This is breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking.
Yeah, I was at a little shindig yesterday, and like one of the people was like, they were discussing this thing. I just sort of kept myself out of discussion. This one person seemed to be a rabid like supporter of Joe Paterno, and if I were to open my mouth, I'm pretty sure she would have probably like scratched my eyes out.
Well, I've seen very little public defense of the man. And I think there is no defense. And anybody that is looking to defend him really must ask themselves, what do they care about more? Do they care about football, or do they care about protecting the lives of little kids? The safety of little kids. And upholding what is supposed to be among the most important principles of any educational facility, which is to try to uplift and benefit young people.
I wonder if Amazon has this.
I doubt it. It looks like, I saw the cover, and it really does look like it's a self-published university press book. I'd be very surprised. I mean, somebody might be selling it on Amazon, but I doubt Amazon itself would have it.
Yeah, because I want to buy this book.
Don't joke about that. You don't want to pay this guy because of that. He'd likely get some sort of revenue from that.
It's not available, and no one's actually even selling it used or anything.
Good. I hope it stays that way. I kind of want to move on. I don't have a whole lot to say. I don't know anything about football. Up until a few years ago, I didn't even know what the quarterback did. I'm still not entirely confident I know all of what a quarterback does.
I played midget football, and I know absolutely nothing about football.
Yeah. So I'm not qualified to talk too much about this. So I probably should move on, and I'm sure you feel the same way. Yeah. So it's getting towards the end of the show, so we have some things that I wanted to get through quickly. And I purposely left something that could be very contentious for the last part of the show, because I don't want to spend too much time on it. But Chemslave, did you see the Mississippi Personhood Amendment story?
Yes, thank God that didn't go through.
I agree with you, actually, surprisingly enough. Chemslave is, just so you know, I don't want to speak for you, Chemslave, but it's my understanding that you are pro-choice on the abortion issue. Is that correct?
I'm not pro-choice. I'm for people having the right to have an abortion. Because I hate these euphemisms of pro-choice, pro-life.
Oh, okay. I was about ready to say, you know what, that is what I mean. Okay, so, you know, that's actually a good point. So, I'm against abortion for all cases except for those cases that protect the mother's life, or in cases of rape or incest. All other cases, I really do view abortion as the killing of a human life. And I don't view that from a religious sense, because I'm agnostic. I don't really subscribe to any religion specifically. The question is, at what point does somebody become human? And at birth, it seems to be an impractical response to that, because, you know, babies can be born premature, and who's alive and who's not alive at what point in a pregnancy?
I don't know. I've read parts and bits and pieces of the Bible, and I don't know. I think second chapter of Genesis sort of leads me to believe that when you breathe, that is when you gain your soul, because the Almighty breathed this Adam's soul into him.
Chemslave, you cannot claim to not be a follower of the Bible for all aspects, and then say, oh yeah, you know what? And this one aspect, yeah, I'm gonna look to the Bible to give me my answers.
I'm not saying I'm using this as my answer. It's just, hey, the religious have most this the fervor into attacking the thing. So it's like, hey, yeah, guess what? Your holy book says this.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right about that aspect of it. But you know, you could read the Bible many ways. So, you know, I don't know. But so anyway, the Mississippi Personhood Amendment was going to define life as starting at conception. And, you know, just, you know, because of that fact, killing a developing life form would be, you know, abortion. It basically had the effect of outlawing abortion, and it was voted down. And this is
amongst
far too strong. What's that?
Amongst other things.
Yes, amongst other things. I don't want to get too much into it. We're running out of time as it is. I disagree with this amendment because I cannot believe that a fertilized egg is a human life. That's just too extreme. Like, you know what the Plan B pill is, right?
Yes. You take it and no child.
That's right. I do not view that as abortion. I don't. And for some social conservatives, that's a controversial position to take. I'm unapologetic about that. I just I at that point, it is still biologically a fertilized egg, and I'm just, I'm not concerned. And if somebody does that, and some people view condoms as abortion, using condoms, using spermicide. People view that as abortion. That's stupid. So this Mississippi amendment did go too far. So what do you think about Clinton wanting, you know, presidents to serve 3 terms? What do you think about that? Dictator.
That's sort of one of those things that's like, why would he want that?
He wouldn't want to go back into office now, would he?
Hope not.
Yeah, I hope not too. Have you seen him lately, though? I don't think he has that much time left. I don't want to wish him ill or anything, but he does not look good. I mean, he needs to. I mean, somebody give him a steak. I mean, good God. Ugh. Oh, well. So, you know, we have a story about Harrisburg, our state capital, but you know what? I really wanted to talk about this, but I have the feeling that this is going to come up in the news a lot more often. So we're going to skip that story. Before we go, though, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about Poland swearing in his first transsexual member of parliament?
It's great.
Yeah,
so more diversity in the government.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, I think it's more of a publicity stunt for that party than anything else. But
yeah, I think you're right. And I agree with you on that one. You know what? I think that pretty much ends it for this week. Did I skip over anything you wanted to talk about?
No, not really.
All right, then. So if you being the audience, if you want to give us any feedback on the show, if you want to agree with us or disagree with us, if you want to give us tips on how to improve, what to do, what not to do, email us. Our email address is feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. I'll say that again, feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. You'll also find at that website, justgettingbypodcast.com, a link to all of the stories that we used to comprise today's show, plus ones that we did not even get to.
And if you have a way of getting rid of the stink for stink bugs, you can please email us. Man, my room stinks.
You know what? Let's talk about this off the air, because I need to talk to you about that. But yes, for ChemSlave's benefit, if you know the best brand of anti-stink bug spray to use, you know, email us. Feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. All right, that does it for today's show. Check back with us on Wednesday, and you will hear some scintillating conversations about civil liberties. Until then, have a good week.